Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we try and gather the news about the video game industry from the past couple of weeks and try to throw a slight analysis spin on it, try to understand what it means, and mostly get all of it in one place so you don't have to worry about reading a bunch of blogs and stuff, and you can get all the news in one convenient podcast. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I'm joined again by Ed Mitchell, who is, so I always say from the Four Players Network. I guess that's correct, right?
Yeah, streamer and web developer for fourplayernetwork.com.
Excellent. How are you doing? So it's Memorial Day weekend, or the end of Memorial Day weekend for you guys. Did you do something amazing?
I went down to the beach, Atlantic Ocean, on the other side of... And just kind of enjoyed the time. It was a little rainy. Tropical storm Bonnie decided to rear its ugly head, but everything was good. We actually got a few good beach days in, and then we drove back today in the pouring down rain the whole way home. So, at least it waited till after we all left. You know.
So it's really a holiday, like a plain holiday, the Memorial Day thing. I thought it was like you had to, I don't know, do some ceremonial thanking of the troops or something like that. And
well, there is that too. They usually do a Memorial Day like kind of celebration slash memorial right in front of in Arlington, Virginia, which is where a bunch of soldiers are buried.
Okay.
And they do like a big like kind of stories about different soldiers and things like that, going all the way back to like Revolutionary War time.
Mm. Okay.
So there is that too, but the majority of us use it as an excuse to not work and get drunk.
Right, a long weekend. Here's a question related to gaming. Is there any company that has dared or that does today some Memorial Day type promotion linked to their games?
Like, for like Call of Duty or
whatever? exactly. Does that happen or do they,
I don't think so.
Okay.
But... Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there might be some games that are off on Steam today, but I think that's just normal discounts, not really because it's Memorial Day.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they don't, commercialism hasn't stooped so low as to, you know, try and sell some Call of Duty or Battlefield.
They probably did some focus testing and found out that they got a little bit of backlash from that.
Probably. Yeah. So, all right. E3 is coming in a couple of weeks. We have additional rumors about what might happen at E3. We're going to be talking a little bit about what we think might be the big things at that show. And then we have a bunch of news. But I think the show might be a little bit shorter than usual, by which I mean, you know, it's not going to be an hour and a half. Maybe it's going to be an hour and 20 minutes. That's usually what happens is when I say it's going to be shorter. But yeah. No, I think it might be a little bit shorter. So hardware things for E3, mostly Microsoft. Apparently, they might be planning to announce a couple of things, maybe even three. One would be a cheaper, smaller Xbox One, basically an Xbox One Lite or Slim or however you want to call it. Yeah, which I think even if they slim down that beast, it could still be enormous. Especially that power adapter thing. I mean, oh my God, does Microsoft not have electrical engineers? How can they not get this thing Anyway, sorry. But I mean, it's pretty stark comparison. If you look at the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, the Xbox One is twice as big, and it has an external power plug, which is...
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, first world problems. But so we might get a slimmer version of the Xbox One, which, fair enough, it's about that time in the console cycle where we see revised hardware for the consoles. But apparently they might be thinking about announcing a more powerful version of the Xbox One, which was hinted at by, who was it, Phil Spencer, I think, a couple of months ago, a few months ago.
Yeah. Well, so I'm kind of curious, kind of who's, between Sony and Microsoft, who came up with this genius plan of having a slightly more powerful one in like three or four years? Like, who came up with it first, and who's kind of reacting from it? It sounds like the Neo is going to come out this fall, maybe, and then but the Xbox won't they won't be able to get a new one out till 2017. So,
yeah, which is a concern for me. Not for so first of all, who decided it first? I think they if they're coming out now, they've been working on them since basically the first one came out. So I think they both thought. Maybe now that we have a PC architecture, and maybe we need to put out a version that does 4K at some point, let's just bump the specs as well. And maybe also, you know, when the first one came out, the Xbox One and the PS4, they were very clearly underpowered compared to the standard PCs, which... It was uncommon, you know, it's uncommon in the console life cycle. Usually when the consoles come out, they are a little bit more powerful than the PCs, you know, the average PCs that are available on the market. I'm talking about gamer PCs, of course.
Yeah.
And then obviously as time goes by, and since the consoles have a long life cycle, they become less powerful than the current PCs. This cycle, both machines were a little bit underpowered compared to standard PCs, and maybe they thought, you know what, let's just put them out now. We have PC architecture, we can upgrade it easily, we're going to need a 4K model later. Let's not have to throw away the entire console when we want to upgrade the machine. And just put out a more powerful... You know, I'm pretty sure they thought about it at the same time. It's not like one is copying the other.
I wonder if part of the reason why these consoles are so underperforming is because the dedicated graphics cards nowadays are just coming out so much and so much better. I mean, even NVIDIA's recent announced 1070 is going to be... I saw some specs today that it's better performing than the 980 and the 980 Ti.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, actually, it's pretty incredible how powerful that that new card seems to be. But you know,
so honestly, I don't blame Microsoft and Sony for wanting to kind of push their console a little bit further, simply because, I mean, these consoles it's going to get to the point if we wait a whole like 6 or 7, maybe 8 year life cycle, these consoles are going to be vastly underperformed, even if developers learn how to properly like optimize their games for them.
Yeah, and I mean, for sure, we've seen how beautiful Uncharted is, and that certainly looks better than, you know, we said last show, I think it looks better than any game I've ever seen anywhere, including, you know, very power-hungry PC games.
You've seen how Uncharted 1 versus Uncharted 3, it's like night and day, and that's the same architecture and same specs, you know?
Right,
so obviously, developers are going to, especially because it's so close to PCs, developers are going to get better and better at optimizing for these two platforms, but I don't blame Sony and Microsoft for wanting to try and push their console further and further.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it makes sense, as painful as it's going to be for some gamers who are used to
it. It's going to be painful.
But I mean, there's 4K, there's also the VR issue, which I think is to be taken into account, and apparently so all of this is rumors, but apparently that new Xbox One model, which I don't know, do people call it Xbox One 2, Xbox 2? It's going to be funny, but...
Xbox One 4K?
Yeah, something like that.
Xbox 14K?
But yeah, so that one might be VR compatible, which already asks the... You know, it begs the question, we know that for the PlayStation 4 Neo, the PlayStation, the current PlayStation is obviously going to be VR compatible. For the Xbox One 2, would the Xbox One 1 be VR compatible? That's a big question.
I don't think it will be, because Xbox One is already shown to be not as powerful as PS4, and I think the base PS4 is like just barely on the edge of being able to support PlayStation VR.
Yeah, that's
we're not even talking about a VR platform that's made specifically for Xbox. We're talking about a possible partnership with Oculus, which they kind of hinted at that that last E3 at their press conference. They mentioned that they were going to try and have some talks with Oculus at their press conference, which was weird. But I mean, we already know how powerful of a PC you need to make an Oculus work. And I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I honestly don't think the current Xbox One will be able to support it.
Well, so the thing is, you can always make the graphics less demanding, and then you'll be able to achieve the FPS you need. And, you know, it could be untextured, you know, 3D cell shaded, whatever, something.
Yeah, right.
And that could run on any machine, right? But yeah, that question is there. And Microsoft and Oculus have been partners for a while now. So I even thought last E3 that they would announce a special version of the Oculus Rift, or, you know, the Oculus Rift 1 or something that would run on the Xbox One. Obviously, it didn't happen. That Xbox One, which by the code name is Scorpio, for the more powerful version, is very likely going to be VR compatible. But yeah, the question for the Xbox One is there. And it's going to be very interesting. The other thing that concerns me a little bit is apparently they're being pushed to announce that Scorpio because of the PlayStation 4 Neo, even though that Scorpio isn't scheduled for launch until 2017. And that
do you think it's going to come out like early 2017, which is why they wanted to kind of hype it up at E3?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it would have to be, because if you announce something that's going to, these kinds of announcements freeze your sales to an extent. And
yeah.
You know, people look at the new version, they're not going to buy the old crappy version now, especially if it's, you know, if it doesn't play VR and you might be, I mean, that we don't know, it's just speculation. But I mean, there's one way to get around this, which we discussed during the PlayStation 4 Neo rumors. And if you announce, you know, PlayStation 4 is now $299 or, you know, $249, and the PlayStation 4 Neo is going to be $399 when it comes out this October, then, you know, you have set the stage. People who want the Neo can wait. People who want the current one, you know, it's going to be that price for at least a year. And you're like, okay, I'm going to buy it now because there's no point waiting, and I want the cheap one. That works. I guess they could do that for an Xbox One upgrade as well. But 7 months, 6 months or so, or maybe more if it comes out later in 2016, in 2017, sorry, is pretty long. I think it's a dangerous way of doing things if that's the way they do it. And
yeah, especially if they make it very obvious that the current Xbox One is not going to be enough to support VR.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Or like another concern that I have, like I have an Xbox One. Do you have an Xbox One, Patrick?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the one.
Have you
the
used
one tech
it?
Purchase that I'm regretting.
Yeah. So I played Halo 5 on here, and I played Quantum Break, and that's it.
Yeah.
I have Sunset Overdrive, but I haven't really gotten into it yet. I only got it because it was free on the Xbox Live subscription or whatever. But I don't know. I just feel like this purchase hasn't gotten me as far as I want to, and I feel like it sits more than it doesn't, unlike my PS4 does.
Yeah, same with me. I'm, you know, it's not a bad console. It's just, it's hard to recommend at this point. And
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, if your friends are, anyway, let's not go back into the, do you prefer one or the other? That's not the point.
Yeah,
but the point is, you're right. I haven't been using it. I'm thinking about selling it even, especially
and,
if there's
and
a
the new one exclusive out. That I was really looking forward to, which was announced like forever ago, was Scalebound. but that got delayed to 2017, and it looks like they're possibly going to be doing the new console at the same time. And if my console isn't enough to run Scalebound, I'm going to feel a little miffed, you know?
Well, that I don't think is going to be an issue. I think it's the same as the PlayStation 4. I think they're going to be very strict about how the games can run, and they have
I hope so, because they were not as strict with Tomb Raider when it came out on Xbox One and Xbox 360 at the same time. The Xbox 360 version was not good at all. It was really slow, really framey, and stuff like that. So I'm hoping they do it. And it makes me.
I think it's a different issue, though. I think they can't. Yeah. They have, you know, just like Sony. The entire success, I mean, not sales success, but the brand recognition of those brands is going to rest on the way they handle those two concurrent machines being on the market. If Sony messes it up, or if Microsoft messes it up, if games are crappy on the old Xbox and, you know, good on the new one, it's going to look incredibly bad for Sony, and that can create a bad buzz that can kill a brand. And so I don't think they can afford to do that. So
I'm just nervous about the fact that, like, I mean, I mentioned before that I'm a software developer, so I kind of know a little bit about the way these things work, and I'm nervous that companies will go for getting the best of what they can out of the lower-end version, and it won't be able to use the upper-end version to its fullest extent.
Obviously it makes... But, I mean, you know, yes, they are supposed to be, like, what, 3-4 times more powerful, you know, each than the... Talking about the new PlayStation 4 and the new Xbox One, but it's like PCs, and I see a lot of concerns about will developers be able to develop for those machines at the same time. And I've seen people saying, oh, then you have to develop for Xbox One and Xbox One 2 and PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 Neo, and that's horrible. But that's not really the case. Most of them are already developing for PC. And on PC, you have to run your game on a wide gamut of performance types. So I don't think it's going to be that, you know, that different from the situation now. The situation now, you develop the game for a PC, then you try to optimize it for PlayStation 4 and for Xbox One. It's a little bit of work, but it's not, you know, and yes, you're going to add the Neo and the Xbox One too. And it's a little bit more optimization, but it's not like you're all of a sudden tripling the work, right? It's just you set a performance level for each of the consoles on the PC gamut, and you try to optimize for that at that point. So I'm not as concerned as many people seem to be for the amount of work that's going to represent. But
from my personal experience, plus reading some things about what developers have been saying about it, that they are nervous as well, you know? So,
yeah, nervous for sure. I can understand that, but I don't think it's going to be the apocalypse that some people are describing. People are describing it as enormous, you know, weight on the developers if that happens. And I mean, I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. This is all speculation for now. And there might be a Chromecast, like, you know, an Xbox streaming thing or PlayStation TV like thing, which is going to allow you to stream your Xbox or maybe even your PC games on another console, which could be cool. I like the idea of the Steam Link and of those devices.
I've used the Xbox One streaming to my PC. I have everything wired in, so it's going straight through my router. No Wi-Fi involved in it. I have not had issues with it at all.
Right. Yeah. I think it works pretty well. Yeah. So look forward to that. Another little bit of rumor, which is not directly E3 related because Nintendo is not going to be presenting anything at E3, but apparently the Nintendo device that we are thinking is the NX and that might be two different consoles, it might be there's a very unsubstantiated rumor from the Wall Street Journal, so it's still, you know, a reputable source, that is talking about the MH for a new code name for Nintendo's handheld, which could indicate that the NX is not one system for handheld and home console, but it might be two different devices. So this is way too rumory. Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't the Wall Street Journal. It was Yahoo's finance site in Japan. So yeah, make of that what you will. I just wanted to mention it because it's always interesting to speculate about what Nintendo is going to do in the hardware space next. But it's super rumory, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But yeah, so there you go. Any comment on this before we move on to guesses?
I am excited for whatever the NX ends up being, and I'm hoping it lives up to my hopes and dreams of what I want it to be. So I'm just cautiously optimistic until then.
Yeah, same. So what else? So E3 in general. I think we have had a lot of rumors about E3, but I'm, you know, let's, it's always fun to speculate a little bit more. So before we move on to the general news and quick news, any guesses about the big thing that things that might happen at E3, what you're hoping for and all of those
Red
things?
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh my God, you stole mine. That was exactly the one I was going to go for.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bethesda is still having a conference this year, and so last year was their first conference, and they absolutely kind of they blew everyone's minds with Fallout 4. So I'm hoping we get some gameplay of Dishonored 2, which they only showed us a cinematic last year, and we haven't really heard much from it since then. But if I had to make a guess, they're going to finish up the conference with Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever it's called.
Right.
Red Dead Revenge or something.
It has to be Red Dead Re something, right? Because it was originally Red Dead Revolver, Red Dead Redemption, Red
Revenge
Dead.
Could be cool based on how everything worked out in the last game, you know?
What? Revenge? Yeah, you're right. That could be. Although they might go with a completely different set of characters, but yeah.
That'd be perfectly fine with me.
Red Dead Re. We had a Revengeance that was Metal Gear
Revelation.
That's way too Assassin's Creed. It seems like
yeah,
you know
true.
Conspiracy. But yeah, that would be my
Red Dead Brotherhood.
Red Dead Redemption. It's one of those titles that is from the previous generation and legendary because everyone loved it and everyone was so blown away when it came out. So yeah, that would be a big thing.
We'll probably get some Mass Effect Andromeda from the EA conference, which is earlier that week.
Yeah, that is, we've heard about this and we've heard rumors. It's not even rumors. It's been delayed to 2017. So
yeah.
We haven't really seen any gameplay footage from Andromeda, have we?
No, not at all. No, there was that one that was leaked. It was like a 15-minute gameplay that was leaked.
Okay, I haven't watched it. So
yeah.
So that's it. Just Red Dead Redemption 2. That's your.
I'm hoping we get some more stuff about ReCore, which was announced last year at Microsoft's press conference. Plus more information about Horizon Zero Dawn at Sony's. Hopefully that comes out this year, but I'm nervous about that possibly coming out this year.
Yeah, I think this is probably going to be one of the big titles at Sony for sure. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft, I mean, we're probably going to be seeing Watch Dogs 2, right? They've announced it's going to come out pretty soon, so that we might see some of that.
I'm hoping that's better than the first one was, you know? I did play the first one, and I just didn't like it as much as I hoped I would.
Yeah, I think that's the sentiment of a lot of people. There's, what else? Destiny, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Destiny, so I'm we're hearing about
a new expansion, right?
Right, the Rise of Iron is one of the rumors that we've heard in the past couple of weeks, and that would be the next expansion. It would be the Taken King like expansion, meaning a new zone. I loved the Taken King. I think everyone agreed it was a brilliant expansion for Destiny and brought it probably to the level that most people could enjoy it. Certainly during the year, for many different reasons, the game wasn't updated enough to keep most people's attention. And originally, as we know, they seem to have planned to have one expansion, one numbered sequel, and alternate between the two for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the plans seem to have changed because the next one should have been Destiny 2, but that has been delayed to 2017. And now we're just, quote unquote, going to get an expansion. If it's as good as The Taken King, I can totally wait. I will, you know, it will hold my attention for a couple of months and I can wait for Destiny 2 to be fully cooked before it gets released in 2017. And hopefully that game would fulfill the promises, the unkept promises of what Destiny was supposed to be, or in the fevered imagination of lots of gamers. So yeah, Rise of Iron is apparently going to be discussed heavily at the at least I would guess Sony conference, because Activision is in cahoots with Sony for that one.
And there's no Square Enix conference this year, so any of the things that would be announced there would probably lean into Sony. We might get some more footage about the Final Fantasy VII remake, some stuff from Final Fantasy XV, which is coming out later this year, and maybe some Deus Ex stuff as well.
Yeah, very likely. I mean, when is Deus Ex coming out? It's fairly August. Soon, right? Yeah, August. So we're certainly going to see that. Final Fantasy VII for sure. Talking about
The Deus Ex stuff. They've been putting out a few trailers recently. Oh, I guess you have it there, yeah.
Yeah, I have it in the notes. What did you think about that trailer?
I loved that trailer. I'm glad they seem to be really leaning heavily on the whole, like, kind of sort of racism undertones of people that have bionic implants or whatever. So I'm glad that they're doing that. Plus it looks like, I mean, the trailer looks fantastic. It's live action, which actually I think was done fairly well, all things considered. So yeah, I would definitely recommend you go watch the Mechanical Apartheid is the name of the trailer.
Yeah, it was pretty, I don't want to say revelatory, that's a little bit putting too much emphasis, but it was surprisingly excellent. You know, the live action works. It totally works. It feels like, you know, bits and pieces from a high quality TV show or movie even, and it conveys exactly what the Mankind Divided game seems to be about, which is, you know, that age-old question of discrimination and basically what is racism. It makes you feel for that world that they're building, and that, you know, situation where things are understandable from both sides of the issue. And if those augmented people become, you know, start becoming crazy sometimes, then you have to do something about it. And at the same time, they're still people and there are family and friends. And what do you, you know, I thought that made me want to learn more about the world. You know, it made me want to watch a TV show about this and learn more about the game itself, which honestly I've never been hugely interested in Deus Ex. I know it's a good game.
So did you play Human Revolution?
No, I launched it for, you know, half an hour, and then my mind got busy somewhere else.
I think Human Revolution took a little bit to build up, but the mechanics of how you played were really cool of it. So I'm really looking forward to how they expand on that in Mankind Divided.
Yeah, for sure. So.
And so I was talking in our chat about this, and I was like, it seems like they delayed it and then they put a bunch of money into marketing to make people forget about the augment your pre-order thing.
Oh, I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. That's my point. But
you know what? They went back on it. They fixed it.
But it's just funny that I look at this trailer and I almost completely forget that they did that kind of misstep, you know?
True. Right, so there's that. I'm guessing we were talking about Sony. I think Horizon Zero Dawn is probably going to be featured heavily as well. The Last Guardian might make a splash again, although I'm really worried about that.
Their trailer said 2016, and we're almost halfway through 2016. So I'm hoping it does come. They have a release date actually on that game.
In
E3, you know.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not. Crossed. You know. Yeah, I'm not. It's not the game I'm I'm expecting the most of.
Well, but, I love Shadow of the Colossus, so more of that makes would. Yeah. I mean, it's from the same people. It's not necessarily the same kind of game, but yeah.
Yeah, you know they're gonna, you know, they're gonna build the emotional connection to the game and to the characters for sure. I mean, Team Ico is known for that, but. VR, we're probably finally going to see a lot about the PlayStation VR, because honestly, as much as we've seen, we haven't seen huge amounts of what it is and how the cool game. I mean, we've seen rigs and this and that, but I think they're going to push it a lot. This is their last big marketing push before release. I guess there's Gamescom afterwards at the end of August, so they have another one, but yeah, so we're probably going to be seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, but last year I felt like there was almost no VR last year. And I feel like this has to be the year where Sony at the very least and expand out to other press conferences as well, where they put a little bit of emphasis on VR so we can actually like get things going.
On the Microsoft side, I want to hear more about, you know, we discussed the console things, but game-wise, what was the name? That exclusive. Oh my god, with the dragons and the Japanese game.
Scalebound?
Scalebound. Thank you. Scalebound. I had a brain fart. So Scalebound, I'm excited to learn about a little bit more.
So when I was at PAX, I saw a Scalebound presentation that was like behind closed doors, no cameras or anything were allowed, and it was a fantastic game. And what was great, it was like they had you, it was kind of the same kind of thing we've seen in the gameplay trailer so far. And then they showed what happens like after the cut of the gameplay trailer.
Oh, when the two or three people come together.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So he gets at one point not really a Q&A yet, but he's kind of like talking about it. And he leans in real close to his mic. This is the translator, not the, the guy speaks real close to the mic and he goes, "And just so you know, yes, you can get on the dragon and fly." And the guy gets on the dragon and starts to fly to like neighboring islands that are floating in the air. Like if you think about how Nagrand looks in BC, you have all these little islands floating around. And
right.
The whole time I was seeing them in the background, I was like, "Can you fly there? Can you fly there?" And it was like he heard my question because he just was like, "Yes, you can fly there." And there's no loading screen or anything. And it looked pretty far, and flying on the dragon looked fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, that game looks amazing.
Yeah. So hopefully we're going to hear about it a little bit more at E3. Yeah. And you know, we might get a couple of surprises, hopefully, for Microsoft, because they don't have a huge slate. I mean, you mentioned ReCore, and there are that's Microsoft, right? That's a Microsoft exclusive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's ReCore, and there might be a couple more, but there isn't a huge, huge amount. So maybe we'll see something.
For things that are coming out this year, we have Gears of War 4 and... They put Halo Wars 2 on the slate for 2016, but we haven't really seen anything from that since they announced it last year, which wasn't even really an announcement. It was just kind of like a some voice audio, and then it said Halo Wars 2. So we didn't really get to see much of that. So so we'll see. We'll see.
Right. You know, another one I'm looking for. Oh, I guess before that, I have to mention No Man's Sky, because we're talking about Sony. Obviously, No Man's Sky is a big deal, and it's going to come out in August now. It's been delayed, and apparently it's gotten some idiots so angry they're sending death threats, but I don't even want to talk about that. Delay to No Man's Sky. It's going to make for a very busy fall season, but... Sure. If we hadn't had the last 3 years of botched releases, a lot of people would have been frustrated with this, but maybe me included. But I think if there's anything we need to remember from the past 3 or 5 years of video games, is that if someone delays a game, then it's probably because it needs to be delayed and the release wouldn't have been as smooth as it needed to be. So,
yeah, especially this kind of game, which seems to be very like kind of interconnected, connected to the internet, stuff like that. And I'm glad that they were able to man up and just say we can't get it out in time, especially because it's almost June and it was supposed to come out in like 2 or 3 weeks from now. So, August, perfectly fine by me. It's 2 months. It's like the lowest amount of delay that we've seen in the past couple of years. So, well, I mean, when's Mighty No. 9 coming out again? I mean, come on.
It is coming out now.
What? Yeah, it is.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It was supposed to come out in 2014, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the other thing I sort of have hopes for, maybe, you know, hoping against hope, is the PC gaming show. You know, it was such a disaster last year, and it was too long, too corporate-y, too marketing-y, and with no announcements. That was the most frustrating thing, I think.
Very marketing.
Yeah. And the only company that came out with something substantial was, I guess, you know, No Man's Sky announced the PC availability, which was cool. And then Blizzard came with the Eternal Conflict event for Heroes of the Storm, which is not a huge thing, but considering what did happen at the PC gaming show was the biggest thing. So that says something about the show, but I think they know that things weren't good. And I think Sean Plott, you know, Day 9, did as good as he could last year. And he will be able to have more input on this year's show. I think he's hosting again. And we all love PCs as a gaming platform. And I initially thought, why do we need a PC specific show? We have everything, you know, everything is on PC all the time. But I think it's nice to celebrate that platform as well, which is the forever there granddaddy of gaming, and it never goes away, and it's the best, most interesting one. I have some hopes for that. I'm ready to be disappointed, but I want to hope it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at the presenters list, the ones that really stick out are Microsoft, Paradox, Relic, and Bohemia Interactive. The bunch of the other ones are kind of like products like AMD and Razer again. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's just, I'm hoping it will.
More press conferences are never bad, you know?
For sure.
More information, you know?
What else? I think that's about it. Let me look at my E3 schedule. Obviously, I would have hoped Nintendo did things, but we're going to see Zelda, but that's, you know, to be expected. So, I think that's about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's move on to other topics, which are mostly just quick news. We had a presentation of Gran Turismo Sport. It's going to be launching in November. There's not going to be the beta that was promised. What did you think of Gran Turismo Sport?
Not a racing game person, so right. I'm not going to be really impressed by anything. but I did see an article today that talked about how it will not feature dynamic time or weather, which I guess was a feature in the past, and now they're being dropped in this version of the game. So yeah. I'm sure fans are not too pleased about that.
Yeah, I think Gran Turismo, I mean, we've mentioned it a couple of times, but it used to be awesome 20 years ago. And racing games in general aren't as big nowadays, but even in that category, there are other games that seem to be grabbing racing game fans' attention. Forza is one of them. Project Cars is another one. Even arcadey things like Trackmania and stuff like that. So obviously, it's not the same thing at all. But it seems that Gran Turismo is obviously a big event when it comes out, but it's not getting the praise that it used to when it was, you know, Gran Turismo 1 was mind-blowing and up to maybe 3 or 4. Are you a Civilization guy?
I am. I love Civilization.
So, Civ 5 came out a while ago. There was Beyond Earth that came out. It was, you know, well-received, but it didn't blow anyone's mind. Civ 6 was just announced, and it's releasing in October. What did you think of what we saw of Civ 6?
So, when I first started playing Civ, it was Civilization 3. And ever since then, it's gotten kind of more and more complicated. And so it makes me a little nervous because I felt like Civ 5 was just too much of a big jump for me. So I'm excited for Civilization 6 like I have been all the other Civilization games. So I'm hoping that I'm able to ease myself back into it and not get too overwhelmed too quickly.
Did they announce anything in the features that made you, you know, got you interested, or is it just...
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of looking over the stuff that just to remind me, but more building and more research. That's my favorite part of the game, is just kind of like building up, and then going after it and destroying enemy armies. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just a little nervous.
Okay. I forgot to mention Titanfall 2 is a title I really have hopes for, because I think there was a nugget of awesomeness in Titanfall 1, and I hope they can develop it in the second one, and we're certainly going to see this at E3. So okay, so Civ 6, what else? Fable is apparently getting out of the runt that it was in when Lionhead closed, or when Microsoft closed Lionhead, although maybe not in the way that you're hoping for. I saw that piece of news earlier this morning, and there's a new Fable game in development from, what's the name of the company, founded by former Lionhead employees? It's Flaming Fowl Studios. And they're going to Kickstarter, and I thought, oh my god, that's perfect. There was a genuine outcry when Lionhead was closed a few weeks ago, and Fable is a beloved franchise. That could work. And then apparently it's a collectible card game, which, yeah. Yes, okay, I'm sure it's going to be fun, but it's not the kind of, you know, I think one of the issues with Fable Legends, which was the game that they were working on that ended up being canceled, one of the issues that people discussed was the fact that they wanted a Fable sequel, not a MOBA/asynchronous right. dungeon conquering thing that Fable Legends was. And I mean, I understand why they can't do a Fable sequel, because that would cost a trajillion dollars. And also Microsoft, I'm guessing, which is licensing the name to that company, I'm guessing they wouldn't license Fable, you know, for whatever it would be, because they want to keep that for themselves at some point. But I'm not sure how well that CCG is going to fare.
Yeah, and if it doesn't do very well, I'm not sure. I don't feel confident that we'll see a Fable 4 anytime soon.
Yeah, at some point, I think in the future it will, you know, show up. But
maybe.
Talking about card games, Skylanders Battlecast is just came out. It's basically a Skylanders take on, again, Hearthstone, with cards that you can buy, and you can see them in the game with the tablet that you use, and you know you film the card, and it ARs the character out of the card. And I tried it. I was a little bit surprised, because it's supposed to be simpler than Hearthstone, because obviously the target audience is often a little bit younger. I thought it was incredibly complicated. There's, you know, you have to choose three heroes, and then you have to build a deck of 30 cards on top of the heroes, and then you have some equipment you can have, and you have some relics you can use, and you can decide who you attack between the relic and the hero. And the it was a little bit confusing, honestly. So but yeah, the Skylanders franchise is still going.
I think it's too complicated to for kids to get into?
Well, I mean, no, it's still... I have to tell this story, too.
Okay.
When I came to Japan, I started seeing those Mobile Strike ads everywhere. Is the marketing campaign for that mobile game as big in the U.S., or is it just in Japan? Mobile
yes.
Strike.
Yes, okay. Yes, I've seen these ads. I think I remember seeing one of these ads on, like the Super Bowl or something
okay.
like that.
All right.
So,
So it's on YouTube everywhere. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, Schwarzenegger is playing this game in the elevator in his room and like everywhere.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's the commercial that I saw at the Super Bowl. Yes.
All right. So that's the game. And I figured I'm seeing it so much, I'm going to just check it out and see what this thing is. So I installed it. I launched it really intending to, you know, actually try it out for at least, you know, a couple of games. I kid you not, I held out for 20 seconds before I almost puked and had to uninstall it. It was so obnoxious. You know, it was the tutorial, quote-unquote, section is basically a bunch of green arrows telling you where to tap with a scantily clad female guide telling you, now tap here to do this, tap here to do this, tap here to do this. And it's in a forest of incredibly confusing UI. And you just follow the thing and you tap, tap, tap. You don't understand what you're doing. And the UI is so bad. The thing is, you know, I tried it on my iPad Air 2 and it felt like it was not running properly at all, because it wasn't powerful enough to run those. It was basically, it looked like a jumbled CSS web page. It was, oh, it was so bad. It made me think of the previous Marketing Storm app, which was something Fire Age, which had another, it was a famous, I can't remember. Who it was, Mariah Carey or someone.
No, it was
Beyonce or who was it? Oh, Kate Upton. There you go, Kate Upton. one of those, you know, people that People magazines like.
Yeah, like Beyonce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, okay, that was uncalled for. But, you know, it was that FireAid thing. I also installed it, and I looked at it, and I was like, bleh. I puked. It was so confused. Like, design-wise, the UI is so bad. How do those games make any money? Who in their right mind launches this thing? Especially if they're not a you know, a game person, how do they launch this thing and keep playing it? I don't understand how these things work. I honestly do not. Anyway, my point is, because there is a point to my whole story, Mobile Strike is incredibly complicated and seems like something you never want to get close to. Skylanders Battlecast is nowhere.
I see where you're going.
There you go. Battlecast is an actual game, and it seems to have somewhat convoluted mechanics, but it's still, you know, a game that you can wrap your head around, and the tutorial section is much easier to get through. So I think that, you know, kids that, if they're not, you know, five, they're going to be fine. Probably the target age for the Skylanders is going to be fine with that game. It's just that it was surprising. It wasn't a little bit more simple than Hearthstone, which is the simplest CCG I've seen. So, it wasn't bad. I'm not going to play it, because if I want to play a CCG, I have another one that I'm enjoying. But it was interesting to see that that Skylanders is continuing to do different things. And we're sort of getting towards the end of the show. I wanted to mention the fact that Battleborn, which I haven't been able to play because my Mac, which can run Overwatch, I figured maybe it can run Battleborn as well. No, it cannot. It getting everything to the lowest possible resolution and detail, it was like maybe 5 or 10 frames per second. So I bought it and couldn't play it. And then I bought Doom because everyone's been saying it's awesome. And I figured maybe I can try it a little bit, but I don't have enough space on my bootcamp partition to install it. So yeah, I'm telling you, PCs are where it's at.
Sounds like you need to get a new computer, Patrick.
Well, so I like my Mac for work stuff, but obviously it's crap for gaming. So So yeah, anyway, Battleborn has not been selling well, and it's getting price cuts everywhere. I've seen it as low as 25 euros, which is maybe $30 on was it on Amazon or Steam or something.
I think it's missed its opportunity to get as much money as possible. It's outside of that window now.
Yeah, yeah. It's but I mean, it is very telling how the price cut is painful. Like it's a full price game, and it's now $25, $25-30. It's that is harsh. I haven't tried it. Everyone says it's cool enough. Obviously, it's not being successful as Overwatch, which a lot of people are. I want to say one thing about the comparison between the two. Everyone's coming out and saying, "Oh, but you're comparing them, but they're absolutely not comparable. Battleborn and Overwatch are a super different game. Why are people being so stupid and comparing the two?" And I think that's such BS, because yes, they are incredibly different, and that's what everyone's been saying, except when you first hear about them, they are both FPSs, and they're both hero-based, and yes, there is one that is more towards the MOBA genre, and one that is more towards the fast FPS arena shooter genre, but when you first hear about them, they're both FPSs, hero-based FPSs. Of course you're going to think, oh, they seem somewhat similar. So, yeah, it annoys me so much when people go like, oh, you're so stupid comparing them. Yes, once you've tried them, you understand, or once you hear a little bit more about them, you understand they're different. And again, that's what everyone who's tried them has been saying. No one has tried them and come back and said, they're the same game. No one. So, obnoxious. It feels very obnoxious to me. I don't know why it annoys me so much, but it does.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a couple ways you can describe a game without starting to compare it to other games. So I don't really see a problem with drawing lines of comparison between things. I mean, you could call it an FPS league, and you would get league people mad. So you're really not going to win it either way.
Yeah, I think I have a thing about, you know, using language inaccurately. It's like I try to be precise. I don't always succeed, and I welcome people correcting me, and when I'm not being factually correct and stuff like that, I welcome it. But I have we should explore my childhood for the reason why it annoys me so much. But anyway, there you go. I've said it. So Battleborn, I'm really looking forward to trying it out. I know it's not being successful, but I will definitely try this in Doom when I come back in Europe in a couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it and seeing what it's all about. So anyway, Battleborn is getting a huge price cut. If you think you might be interested, now's the time, because it's very cheap. And by all accounts, it's a good game. So I don't know if you've tried it.
But I'm going to give it a try when it gets cut down in price. I just spent too much money on the Overwatch collector's edition, so I can't really justify buying Battleborn at the same time too.
Yeah, understandable. So we're going to talk about Overwatch a little bit. I didn't really have it on the lineup, but Ed had not played it during the beta, only for the open beta, and you're now playing it. So I'm going to get out of the conversation and let you tell us what you think about it. But before that, I just want to mention the Warcraft movie, since we're talking about Blizzard stuff. And just to mention, I haven't seen it. I hate spoilers. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not even reading the reviews. But what I'm seeing is that apparently film critics don't like it. And fans apparently love it. So I don't know what that means for the movie. It seems maybe Duncan Jones hasn't managed to make it into something that the general public can like, in the same way that Marvel has made comic books movies into something that normal, quote-unquote, people can like. But every single person who enjoys the game, who's seen it, has said they love it. So there you go. I hope it makes enough money. The budget is relatively limited. It's 100 million. I hope it makes enough money to warrant a sequel. And I hope they. I haven't even seen it, and already I want a sequel. Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I don't think that I'm nervous about it making enough money domestically, but I have a feeling it will definitely make its money internationally. People are saying 25 million opening weekend is what it's projected to do, so that's a little nerve-wracking. I know I'm going to go see it, so that's really all that matters to me.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. But it's been opening super well in Europe, where it's already out. And the thing is with that movie, I discussed a little bit on The Instance, but it's the kind of movie where you know that all of the fans are going to go see it opening week. And so the strong opening is great, but then the concern becomes, are people who are not fan going to go see it in the subsequent weeks? So is it going to keep making money, or is it going to make all the money it's ever going to make during opening week? I think it's the big question.
I'm hoping that maybe some people that like played WoW back in Wrath of the Lich King time or whatever, and have since quit, those people might look at the critic reviews and goes, oh, I'm going to hold off on that. But then once the movie actually comes out and there starts to get a little bit of a fan buzz around it, then they'll be like, oh, maybe I should go and see the movie if people that were fans of the game liked it. So
yeah, that could work like that. It would make sense. But anyway, two more weeks, and then I can see the movie. All right, Overwatch. So I've talked about Overwatch a lot. I've had more than one person tell me that I talk about it all the time, which is true. I completely acknowledge it. So for this one, I'm going to do what I did in my French show, which is get out of the conversation, as I mentioned, and let someone else talk about it. So Ed, so you didn't play it during the closed beta. You got to play it during the open beta,
and I never got into the closed beta, but I did play it during both of the stress test weekends plus the open beta. So I didn't get as much experience with it as a lot of other people, but the little bit that I did get, I fell in love with just the couple different characters. And since then, I've played every single character. I'm middling to good at most of them, you know? It's been a while since I played a game like this where I've been wanting to play it as soon as I get home every day. I want to play with all my friends. All my friends have all got it. We all play together. We all make groups of six and just destroy. Every time I go home, or I go to work rather, we talk about it at work. I'm on the Overwatch subreddit all the time and linking things in our gaming Slack channel at work with different play of the games and things like that. We talk about how Torbjorn is so dumb. How do you get a play of the game? It's Torbjorn all the time. It's so annoying. It's just, I think that the game manages to do all the things that Blizzard does fantastically. The world building, the characterization of the different characters, the little tidbits, the little kind of things that people, interactions that the characters have before the game start. And I am not a multiplayer game person, but for some reason this has really, really sunk its teeth into me, and it won't let go. And I don't want it to let go. I love it so much. I just can't stop. I was playing it before we started this game. Before we started recording the podcast rather. And my friend was like, I thought you had to go record a podcast. And I was like, yeah, but I have enough time to play two games. so we played two games, and I totally kicked ass as Reinhardt like I like to do. I love it.
What do you think makes it work for you who isn't a multiplayer? Are you an FPS person?
Yeah, so I played lots of Halo back in the day. Nothing since like Halo 2, Halo 3 time has really gotten me back into multiplayer.
And so what do you think works in this one that maybe didn't work in the previous ones? Because to mention, there have been many competitive multiplayer titles in those interim, but they just stayed relatively confidential. So yeah, what do you think works on this one that makes you like it?
I think the fact that we... So Battleborn was announced first before Overwatch was, but I didn't even hear about Battleborn until after I heard about Overwatch. So when I was watching BlizzCon, whenever it was announced, and they talked about all the, Yeah, what all the different heroes and stuff like that. That's what really piqued my interest, because I was just so used to everybody kind of being the same kind of player. I mean, you had different loadouts and stuff in Call of Duty, but it never really interested me. You always had the same. It was always the same gameplay every single time. With this, you are playing a different type of game with every single different character. With Torbjorn, you're kind of playing tower defensey with your turret. With Reinhardt, you run up and smack people with your hammer. Even Symmetra, who's kind of a weird like support defense mix, kind of you place turrets to kind of annoy people, but you can still like do some really cool things with both your shields and your gun itself. Your gun is actually really powerful with Symmetra, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description, and that's something people have been hearkening on the fact that each different character changed. It feels a little bit like playing a different game in the same way that it does when you're playing a different class in WoW or a different character in Hearthstone or that kind of thing, which is very mobile-like.
Even Widow and Hanzo, which are both sniper characters, Hanzo has his bow and arrow, which you have to make sure you arc properly in order to hit the characters right. And of course, Widowmaker's a sniper. But I was surprised at how differently all the characters feel when they play. If you think about the different types of attack characters, they all play so differently with Tracer versus Reaper and Pharah and stuff like that. So, I think what keeps making me come back is with Halo and Call of Duty and those kinds of shooters, you don't get a lot of variation in the games that you play because most of them are pretty much the same. You go towards the power, you go get the power weapon, and then you kill other people. But with this, I am able to change it up so that every game, despite there only being like three different types of maps, every game feels different every single time I play it.
It makes sense. It's definitely one of the draws for this game for me as well. So another question, who would you say you wouldn't recommend the game to? Who would you say might want to be, careful about diving into the hype?
So if you really, really like single player narrative focused games this won't really do much for you. You get a little bit of the narrative and kind of the interactions, like I said earlier, the interactions between characters at the start of the match, but there is no single player, there is no narrative inside the game. You get most of that stuff outside the game. So if you're looking at Overwatch and you think, I like Blizzard's way they tell stories, even the kind of the world building that they do, most of that stuff is external from the game and not really internal to the game. The game's not really quote unquote canon because you have like a Tracer fighting a Winston and they're supposed to be on the same side of the conflict. So if you're looking for that kind of style of game, you're not going to get it with Overwatch, at least not at launch.
Yeah. Okay. So really the single player thing is what you would. Yeah.
And I've admitted to people that I do feel it is missing that kind of gameplay, but I think that the multiplayer that's there is enough to make it worth the $40 that it is to buy it digitally.
Yeah, or $60 on console, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's I was very surprised at how much I enjoy. I didn't mind. I was sure I was going to mind the fact there is no single player content, but ultimately I was very surprised at how much I didn't mind it. But
it's a good game. It's a good game. The matches are only at most kind of 10 minutes long, so it's a good game to kind of get in, play a few games before you have to go do something like record a podcast,
I do know, actually. Yeah. Intimately. All right. That feels pretty accurate. I think I would probably there's another category of people I would say maybe it might not be for you. I think It might or might not. It's people who have been playing FPSs for a very long time and who have seen it all, basically. I've seen a few people saying that they don't really get what the hype is about, because certainly there's a lot of hype about the game and it seemed to be making a lot of noise. And a lot of people, I mean, not a lot, but I've seen some people saying that they just don't get it, that this is things that they've seen before and that the game doesn't bring a lot of new gameplay mechanics to the table. And I think that the reason those people are saying it is because they're so used to those kinds of games. You know, maybe they've been playing Team Fortress for a long time, and they played Quake back in the day, and they played Unreal, and even recently, you know, Tribes and the what's the name of that thing? I can't remember. There's been, you know, not low breakers, but Time Breakers, Splitters. There's been a bunch of those games. And I think the thing that Blizzard does is that it takes, I mean, that's what they say themselves, and it's very well known that they take a type of game that has a huge amount of fun in it, but that fun isn't exposed and isn't as accessible as it could be. And that they take those fun elements and they bring them out. They remove some of the tedium and some of the things that get in the way of the fun, and they expose the fun to the most amount of people possible. Often, this implies simplifying some of the gameplay elements, and often it implies removing some of the more intricate complexities of the gameplay. And usually they add depth and make it complex in other ways, but it is less hardcore if you want to look at it that way. So they did it for WoW, they did it for Hearthstone, both wildly successfully. They did it for Heroes with a lot less success than for those other two. It seems they're doing it for Overwatch now as well. And I think some people that, you know, the people that have not experienced that kind of fun in the FPS genres are discovering that how amazingly fun those FPSs can be, right? You know, what is fun in the FPSs? And for those people, for people like me and you, it's new. We're discovering this fun and we're loving it because we're discovering how much fun FPSs can be. And, you know, obviously I've played FPSs before, you have too, but you understand my meaning. And the people who already know how fun FPSs can be because they've been into it for a long time, they can either embrace it or think, and certainly some, you know, longtime Team Fortress 2 players have embraced Overwatch and they're playing it a lot and competitively and all of this, but other people might think, well, I don't get it. We've had this for a long time, and I don't understand why this is better than the thing, or, you know, or why people are liking it when I've had CSGO for a long time, and I've had fun with Team Fortress 2, and I've had fun with Tribes, and, you know, all of those games. So I think I would, this is a very long-winded explanation to say that maybe some people that are already into FPSs might think this game is a little bit trite and doesn't bring much to the table compared to what they've already been enjoying for a long time. So,
yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that your comparison to how Blizzard took WoW and Hearthstone and turned it into something very popular, it might turn people's noses up that were really hardcore into EverQuest, you know, things like that. But I think that even a hardcore FPS person can look at this game and see or a TF2 person could see the joy that it could bring to someone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And certainly the general feeling about the game has been incredibly positive, and I've mentioned it a little bit before, and it was you know, after a while when you're isolated in the beta and talking to the same people and just same Reddit group, and to, you know, you start thinking, okay, we all love it, but will everyone else? And then the game is released, and apparently, yes, everyone else does love it as well. So it's kind of a, all right, phew.
And just one more thing I will say about the launch itself. I thought that it went off without a hitch. It came up a little bit late.
Yeah, it was 15 minutes late, but
no big issues, no big problems. And I was really impressed, and I'm glad Blizzard learned a lot from the Warlords launch, that they were able to keep up with the demand.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's been a really, the last few launches have been pretty smooth, I think. Maybe for the Hearthstone expansion, there was a little bit of a traffic jam, but mostly it's been good. One thing that surprised me is that we didn't get a day one sales press release. I was fairly sure we would get one, but certainly I really think we're going to get a week one press release probably today or tomorrow. If we don't, I'm super puzzled. I don't understand why they wouldn't talk about this. At least, I mean, day one, I was sure. But week one, I would be shocked if they didn't talk about it.
Yeah, and if they don't, it'll be in the investor call
that's
coming up.
For sure.
So.
For sure, but I've been wrong about everything I've predicted about this game before, so I shouldn't be surprised.
I mean, if they still had Patrick Beja in charge of PR over there, there would be a release already, right?
And that might be a huge mistake. I don't know. They have much more PR clever people than me out there. All right, I think that's going to be it for the show. Ed, where can we find you on the internet when you do stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Edesis. That's E-D-E-E-S-I-S. And if you want to just keep an eye out for when I stream live on 4pp.tv, you can go visit the calendar over at 4playernetwork.com/calendar. And keep an eye out. We're looking to make some improvements on that website in the next couple of weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that. We're doing some cool new stuff. So keep an eye out for it.
Ooh, exciting. So basically you're going to be curled up in a bowl under your desk hoping that nothing explodes when the site gets upgraded.
Well, I mean, I was talking about Blizzard doing so well, and that's just going to come bite me later. So.
All right. The link to the Twitter is obviously going to be in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook, and you can find this show at frenchspin.com. You will also find the Phillies Club there, which is a show about international news, which I assure you, you will enjoy. And we had a pretty good show last week. Also, we are doing E3 coverage with Scott Johnson during E3 of all things. We're going to try and cover live as many of the conferences as we can. And they will be available probably on his Boop Show feed for later listening. We did it last year and apparently people liked it. I'm not sure why people enjoy listening to commented conferences after the fact, but apparently people like it, so we're gonna do it again, and I'm glad people enjoy it. And finally, if you enjoy Overwatch as much as I do and as much as Ed does, you might want some more Overwatch content, and in that case, go check out Overwatchers, which is a show hosted at amove.tv, which is Garrett Weinsruhl's website. It's a bi-weekly show all about Overwatch, as the name implies. We might do a few more episodes to get, because of the launch. So just go check it out. amove.tv, Overwatchers is the name of the show. That's going to be it. Thank you so much for listening. Next episode will be a little bit late because we'll be recording a summary of all of E3 with Scott. And that might be a couple of days late because we're going to wait for all of the conferences to be over. But it will be on the feed for sure. And I think it's going to be a fascinating one. So we'll talk to you then. And until then, have fun playing Overwatch.
I'm going to go smack some people with Reinhardt's hammer.
Ooh, that sounds appealing. I'll do that too. Bye, everyone.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.